We continue, we quote the next pasuk. The Egyptians made us evil, and they afflicted us, and they gave hard labor upon us. Notice again, we're going to take word by word in the verse, break it down and explain. What does it mean they did evil to us? Ha, as it says, let's outsmart them. Because if they multiply, then when there'll be a war, they too will join our enemies. They'll fight against us. So the Egyptians see them as a threat. So they say, we have to be evil to them. Let's make a caste system. Let's put them down. Let's tell the Jews they're worthless. Let's keep them illiterate. Let's make them feel like they're worthless. They afflicted us. They set up people whose sole job was misim. What does misim mean? So we translate it as taxes. The word lehames means to melt. They had officers whose sole job was to wear down the Jews. Sarei misim, officers in charge of wearing them down. Leman anoto b'sivlotam. And their job was to figure out how to make their burdens as painful as possible. Meaning it's not enough they should work for Pharaoh, but let's put sand in their boots. It's not enough they should work for Pharaoh. Let's make them build buildings on territories where there are earthquakes consistently, and then they'll die as they're building, and they'll keep seeing the work they're doing wear down. Let's make them work, but not enough to make them work. Let's make men do women's jobs, and women do men's jobs. Let's destroy them psychologically. Let's find every way we can to make them work. Let's make them, how can we make them suffer? Okay, so if we need a hole dug that's 50 feet deep, we're going to put him by that hole and tell him, dig. And one time, he's going to say, how long? And I'll say, you just dig till I tell you to stop, and walk away. You know you have to come back in an hour and he'll be done, but he doesn't know, make him suffer. And sometimes you tell him, you keep digging. And when he hits 100 feet down, then make him climb back up and say, now take 50 feet worth and put it back in. Make him work and break their spirit. Pointless work, psychologically defeating work. Sarei misim, officers whose sole job is wear them down. Leman anoto b'sivlotam. The Egyptian said, we can't just make them burdens. We have to find ways to oppress them through the burdens. Ve'even arei miskenot lefaroh. So they built storage cities for Pharaoh. Pitom and Ramses. Why were they called Pitom and Ramses? Pitom. Pitom means it was built on quicksand. Whatever they built would get swallowed in. And sometimes they too. Ramses was because everything they built was Mimases. There would be tremors in the earth where they built it, and as much as they built, it kept collapsing. They imposed hard labor upon us. The Egyptians subjugated the children of Israel with hard labor, backbreaking labor, where they'd start off sweetly and end off being as vicious as possible. V'nitzak el Adonai Elohei Avoteinu v'yishma Adonai et kolenu v'yartonenu v'et amaleinu v'et lachatzeinu. We cried out to Hashem, the God of our fathers. And this is an important point. Very often, we had a story like this. I don't remember if it was here or somewhere else. No, it was somewhere else. But this is such a classical thing that it keeps recurring. Things go bad in a person's life, and he doesn't want to daven. Because he says, what kind of hypocrite am I? I didn't daven yesterday. I didn't daven the day before. I know where I was. God knows I'm a hypocrite. What should I daven for? Now I'm suddenly going to daven fervently because I need him? What kind of person am I? So then he doesn't daven then either. And then things get worse. Hashem says, no, I want to hear from you. And even if you only speak to me because you're in trouble, I still want to hear from you. We'll digress only because this point is so important.
But can somebody write himself out? I mean, like, sign himself out? I mean, like, sounds like logging in, right? If you never log in and, like, this.
Oh, so Hashem says, I never close your account. You could always come back in.
What if
you're correct? What? Still consigned. Hashem says, in every circumstance, this goes back to the half-hour philosophical discussion I had with that Russian about why, proving to him why there's always a way back. Logically, not religiously, logically. But But in a nutshell, if you don't let a person back, you're forcing him to continue that route. Meaning there has to be some capacity to come back, because otherwise what are you telling the person? There's nothing you can do, okay, so just keep, then there's no point in coming back.
You come back to a certain point and not go
back. That deserves a much broader discussion. That's
next day there.
Imagine, and this is a scene that happens often. I've been trying to get the message out in different venues, but people very often make a stupid mistake. I wrote a letter about it, but I didn't proofread it, so I haven't yet published it. But this is something that happens often. Parents get divorced, and kids take sides. So imagine a kid that hasn't spoken to their parent for 20 years. Now let me ask you, if that kid would come and tell you, should I call my parent up now? 20 years I haven't spoken to them. They must really hate my guts. Didn't invite him to my wedding. Didn't invite him to my bar mitzvah. Didn't invite him to the first bris of the first son I had. Should I call him up now? What would all of you say? Pick up that phone and call. He wants to hear from you. Bad enough he didn't hear from you at the wedding. Bad enough he didn't hear from you at the bris. He wants to hear from you now. Right? Any intelligent person would say that. So then all the more so with God. Only God goes one step further. God says, if you really mean it and you come back, I'm going to let you get work all the way up. We can be better off as though it never happened. We can consider all the past as prerequisites to coming to the present. Meaning I'm willing to look at all the things you did wrong and say, well, I guess you needed to go through that and that in order to get to here. Meaning Hashem gives us the capacity to come back. V'nitzak el Hashem elokei avoteinu. We didn't call back to Hashem our God. We called to Hashem the God of our fathers. Meaning we were at a point where we were, I wonder, interesting, our forefathers told us, I heard about him. Let me try giving him a call. I hear there's an Uncle Sam out there. Let's see if I give him a call. Will he answer? Will he help me out? Maybe he'll give me a scholarship. I need his hand now. I'm in debt and the banks don't want to help me. Let me try talking to him. V'nitzak al Hashem elokei avoteinu. We called Hashem the God of our forefathers. And this is a tremendous gift Hashem gives us. And a person should never ever make this mistake. Thinking, well, I haven't called for 20 years, so I shouldn't call now. That's terrible. Don't do that. And I know the challenge. Very often a person feels like a hypocrite. Last Rosh Hashanah I said I would do better, but I know what my year looked like. Last Yom Kippur I thought I'd do better, but I know what my year looked like. Okay, so stop and make this year better. Make this year really better. I used to have a chavrusa. And I missed the chavrusa again and again and again. And at some point, I told the Chavrusa, you know, I want you to know, I keep trying to make it and I don't, but I'm hoping tomorrow it's going to happen. And the guy looked at me with this look that said, like, why don't we just say no? And when you show up, we'll make it into a yes. So I couldn't explain it to him. But part of my philosophy in life, throughout my life, has been the story of Rav Itzala. Rav Itzala, before he went to sleep at night, he'd review his day and say, gee, that's pretty bad, Itzala. What'd you do? And then he'd say, okay, but tomorrow's going to be better. And then he'd say, yeah, but yesterday he said tomorrow's going to be better. And then he'd say, yeah, but tomorrow's really going to be better. And then he'd go to sleep. But we have to be prepared to do that. And that's part of the message of the Haggadah. Our forefathers weren't saints. It began with Terach. It began with the Jews being slaves in Egypt. And then went on to the people when they were afflicted, when they were suffering, when everything was going bad. They didn't come up and say, oh, I believe. They said, well, my forefathers believed. Let me see. Vanitzak. We yelled, El Hashem Elokei Avoteinu, to Hashem, the God of our fathers. And now we will analyze this verse piecemeal. The Egyptian king, well, it says he died. That's another way of saying he got leprosy. and he started slaughtering Jewish babies to bathe in them, because that's what they told him, that's what would cure him. Vayanchu v'nei Yisrael min avodah, and the Jews, they started groaning and wailing from the work. Vayizaku, and they cried. Imagine a parent goes to work and he doesn't know how many children he's going to find home when he comes back that night, because he can't stay there and watch. And the Egyptian policemen are going around, and every day they gather a few Jewish children to slaughter for Paro to bathe in, morning, noon, and night. So he leaves his house and he kisses each of the children as the Egyptian is standing there with his whip, and he prays he should come home and find those children still there. Vatal shavatam el Elokim min avodah, and their cry that stemmed from the work, the pasuk stresses, they didn't do tshuva, they were suffering. They turned back to Hashem because it was hard, because things were bitter. Vatal shavatam el Elokim, but their cry came up to Hashem min avodah, even though the cry came out of the work, it didn't come from any deep philosophical change. Yes?
Where do we know about Paro bathing in Jewish children's blood, and is there a parallel between that and the blood libel?
I am unaware of a blood libel connection, and we know it from tradition. When you learn the Midrash, you'll see that there are ways to derive it from the pasuk, but it's really based on tradition.
So you're not aware of a blood libel? I mean, it seems quite obvious. Like, if Paro bathed in our blood, from this, somehow the going turned against us and said that you made it, and that's a problem.
Okay. A different time. Hashem heard our cry. Hashem heard their cry, and we know which cry it is. We described the story earlier of the couple standing on the mortar, and as they're walking on the mortar, they see how swirling the mortar as they're stepping on it, and that's where we pour the red wine into the Karpas, they see it swirling there. Into the charoset, I'm sorry, thank you. Into the charoset, and that signifies that. And I apologize, I didn't realize I was pouring my germy grape juice into the charoset. Those of you who don't mind germs can have from my germs, and those of you who do mind germs have a clean one over there. Yeah, we're not really up to the part where we pour in the wine. I just did it to illustrate the story. Later on is where we pour the wine into the charoset. But this is the pasuk that Chazal tell us it about. That Hashem heard their cry. It's that cry of that couple standing on the mortar, seeing their own child's blood swirling in the mortar as they're stepping on it. And that's where the Medrash continues. What does it mean, Hashem saw our affliction? That's that Hashem saw our own children. It began with the decree to throw the Jewish children into the Nile, and once he got away with that, he could do anything he wanted. Our burdens, adchak, that's a reference to the pressure. You understand? And this is the point in Haggadah when we start talking about pressure, pressure, pressure. You got to get done, got to get done, got to get done. And you understand how pressurized you suddenly become? Imagine an Egyptian standing with his whip as he's yelling at you that way. Meaning it's bad enough that I have to do work. We all know that our emotions, our nerves are so destroyed when someone's yelling at us. And suddenly the pressure's mounting and mounting. You guys know what it's like. And it's just pounding. And they're there. And they're with their big eyes. And they have the whip. And that. You understand what it's like, yeah? That's nachatzeinu. And in a way, that can be even worse than everything else. That can be worse than everything else. The psychological, the pressure, and you'll see how the pasuk builds up to it. Hashem took us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, with an outstretched arm, with great awe, signs, wonders. And now we will analyze that pasuk. Hashem mi Mitzrayim. We said Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. So, I'm going to just translate. Okay, I'm not going to read the Hebrew anymore. In the Seder I do, but now we're short on time, so we'll just read the English. Hashem took us out of Egypt without angel or messenger or Hashem himself. Because, you know what? We didn't deserve it. If it were up to the angels had a say. They said, well, why should we take them out? What are they worth? And that's the idea tonight. That Hashem says, I'm connected to each and every one of you. Hashem says, you're my children. Someone's going to come to you and say, do me a favor. I'm smarter. I'm a better investment. I'm going to be the top medical student at Harvard. I'm going to find the cure for cancer. Pay my college tuition. And you're going to say, buddy, go fly a kite. And he's going to say, I don't understand. You're a boy. What's he worth? Come on. Who are you kidding? The kid gets straight Fs. The kid's been to the same class third time in a row. You buy him a Jaguar. You give him an apartment. You pay his college. Why? Pay for me. I'm a much better investment. What do you say? Look here, buddy. You have a point. But he's my boy, and you're someone else's boy. Bye-bye. What does Hashem say? Angels, you have a point. But they're mine. They're my children. So I'm going to do it because I like them. And that's what Hashem says. Hashem took us out of Egypt. We didn't deserve it. But Hashem says, they're mine. That's what it says. Hashem says he smote the firstborn, the human and the animal firstborn, and destroyed the gods of Egypt. Yeah, Hashem personally did it. And again, we break down the pasuk. Hashem passed through Egypt without any angels, with a mighty hand. That's talking about the pestilence. Here Hashem suddenly shows that he controls life and death. Animals are dropping dead. An outstretched arm, that's Hashem's sword. And great awe, that's the revelation of the Shekhinah, which was amazing. No one else had that, that suddenly Hashem appears. And we did have it. The Jewish people were able to recognize that Hashem was doing everything. And this is a tremendous thing, because, you know, there were once a people who were challenged by many of their neighbors. Little country, neighbors from all around said they would destroy it. And then there was a great war. First, there was a lot of nations got together and decided they're going to destroy that little country, and they didn't succeed. And that little nation, well, they didn't make a declaration that now God is the one who was running the show. They kept parading their tanks and showing their weapons. Every time they make a march about Yom HaTzmaut, the Day of Independence, a lot of people missed the point. And then there was a great war. And just prior to that war, well, the Egyptians were, I'm sorry, give it away. The Egyptians were about to bomb the Israeli airfields. And then the ambassador, the Israeli ambassador to the UN, went to the American ambassador in the UN and said, you know, we think they're about to bomb us. And the American ambassador went to the president, who said to the ambassador, go to the Egyptians and tell them they better behave because we don't want them to start a war now. And good for us, the ambassador listened, which he didn't always do, and went to the Egyptian ambassador. And good for us, the Egyptian ambassador went to the Egyptian president, and he listened, which they didn't always do. And so they paused. And during that pause, the miraculous Six-Day War happened. We attacked them first. Yeah, I know, they don't tell you this part of the story, because they'll tell you how our Air Force is so great and everything else. But they omit a few little details, like the fact that there were a lot of links in this story that didn't have to happen. It could have been the exact opposite. It was on the verge of happening, the exact opposite. But somehow it didn't. I wonder why. And then, let's just go back, not so long ago, 200 missiles fired at this little state. And somehow, nothing happens. 200 missiles. Now, you have to understand where they were aiming. They were aiming to the port city of Ashdod, where there are huge chemical factories. And the people in Ashdod, who I spoke to, told me, a missile falls here, and a missile falls there, but it doesn't fall here. And they keep dancing all around the chemical factories, but they don't hit the chemical factories. Wow! 200 missiles. Not one, not 10, 200.
The Lebanon missile hit Haifa chemical factory,
didn't it? I don't know.
The beginning of the war.
Could be, but you see, they didn't have to evacuate all of Haifa. In Ashdod, they were confident they'd have to evacuate down to Beersheba. A huge circumference, and they didn't know how they'd overcome it. But you know what? We watch all of this, and no, we have to see it. So Hashem tells us his outstretched hand, and it was awesome. And Hashem says there was a gilui shechina, meaning miracles don't always mean there's going to be a gilui shechina. The fact that miracles happen doesn't mean that people are going to recognize Hashem's involvement. Miracles have been happening all around us. But where are we? You know, we like to say how brilliant we are. But you look at the facts. You guys know the story of West Point, right? I'll tell it to you in 1 minute instead of 10. Just because it isn't the subject tonight. But at any rate, West Point isn't willing to teach Israeli wars because they say Israeli wars are miraculous. West Point is the top training military facility in the U.S. So they teach the wars of Napoleon, they teach wars of George Washington, they teach wars of all world history, but they won't teach wars of Israel because they've analyzed the wars of Israel and they can't figure out why Israel won.
No, it's true.
It's true. Okay. So we have this, but do we have Gilui Shekhinah? That's one of the gifts Hashem gave us in Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim, what we're focused on tonight, is the basics of Jewish faith. We had to leave Egypt where we, the Egyptians, and the world were given a glimpse that Hashem runs the world. Once in history, Hashem said, I'll show you. I run the world. I care. I follow what's going on. And that's the great gift of Morah Gadol, the great awe that everyone stood back and said, this is Hashem here. The Egyptians said it, and purposely this was done in Egypt. The greatest sorcerers, they all said, there's no hanky-panky here. We know all the hanky-panky in the world. This is God. Even the sorcerers said, it's Be'elokimi. Uvimoftim, and at this point, you guys don't have plates? Oh boy. We're becoming crude here.
Is there going to be pizza with this Pesach Seder?
No. We had pizza last night, Larry.
Yeah?
We did. Okay, so you guys should all have a plate. Every time we go to a matzah baking factory, you have pizza, no? Okay. Guys, take your plates. And now at this point, when we reach Moftim with wonders, so that's a reference to the blood, as the verse says, I will make show wonders in the heavens and the earth. And then we say, I'm reading it just so you see how we do it. Moftim ze adam kmo shnei mamnatim moftim bashmayim v'aretz. Dam, we stick our pinky in and take out one drop. Va'esh v'timrot ashan. So we say, Hashem did wondrous things. In that verse isn't even a verse that describes what happened by us. It's a verse in Joel. But that verse describes that Hashem's wonders are really, they're composed of blood, fire, and columns of smoke. And now that we're going to describe how the Egyptians suffered, so we take out a drop of wine for each point of suffering. We're trying to show that our rejoicing tonight is over the good Hashem did to us. We're not rejoicing at their expense. We're not rejoicing their suffering. We're rejoicing our what was good for us, how Hashem saved us. So now we go through it, and we go through the 10 plagues. So we say, Dam, and again we take out a drop. Tzifel deha kinim arov tever shchin barad arbe choshech makat bechorov. Rabbi Yehuda yantan bem simanim. Rabbi Yehuda used to put them all together into signs. Ditzach adash be'achav. Yeah.
Agada brings this acronym from
Rav Yehuda. Three reasons. One, Tetzach Hadash, the numerical value is 540, which is the total number of all the plagues that we will see in the next two paragraphs. Number two, Tetzach Hadash Be'achav are breakups that each time the first two was with a warning, the third was without a warning. Rav Hirsch develops the idea that the first one was always within nature, taking something in nature and changing it. The second one is taking something a little bit above that, a little bit more sophisticated. And the third one is something that's completely out of control. Dam, okay, the Nile. Tzfardea, coming out of the Nile, you have the grasshoppers. And then Kenim, you throw up sand, and that turns into lice over everyone. Totally unnatural. Back to the natural. Arov, wild animals. Sometimes wild animals come. Dever, the animals drop dead. Now that's a little bit more on a higher level. Shchin, you throw up into the air ash, and suddenly everyone gets covered with boils. You see the cycle? Okay. Barad, hail. Okay, hail sometimes comes down. Arbe, so now you're having locusts. That's unnatural. Never happened in the history of Egypt. Just like the Tzfardea. It's an influx of a... And then Choshech, unnatural. Not normal. Darkness. And then at the end of it all, you have Bechoros, which is a combination of all of them. You have dropping dead, but of humans. You have people drop dead, but only the firstborn, only the firstborns of the Egyptians. So there you have one that's really encompassing from all aspects. And the third reason is that the Tzach Hadash Be'achav, we have a tradition, is what was engraved into Moshe's staff. These three acronyms were engraved from before creation. That staff was created at twilight, and it came out of the Garden of Eden. And that was one of the wondrous parts of all our journey throughout the desert, was that staff, which deserves a much broader discussion. And the Tzach Hadash V'Achav were engraved in it.
The acronym was referencing to this
place. Correct.
Do you have a shiur online of that?
What?
Do you have a shiur online of that?
I'm different shiur, and we discuss different aspects of it. Okay, so now what we do is we quote Midrashim that basically analyze the verses, and that analysis, we're going to skip it down to the song of Dayenu, but the analysis goes as follows. In Egypt, we had 10 plagues, and in Egypt, the Torah calls it, it's a finger of God. And by the sea, it says it was God's hand. So then they had 50 plagues by sea, because the Egyptians suffered 50 times, because if they got a finger in Egypt and a hand outside, so that's 50. Rabbi Lezer says, well, each of the plagues can be divided into four, because it says Hashem sent against them his anger, his wrath, his troubles, and a band of emissaries of evil. So that means each plague was composed of four. So 40 times 5 is 200. And Rabbi Akiva says, you have to break it down into five, because you have to break down, initially it says there was anger with the wrath. So that breaks down into two. So then you end up having each plague being five. So the 10 plagues are really 50. And then at the sea they had 250. So 250 plus 200 equals 450. Plus 50 is 500. 500 plus whatever. Okay, so you'll figure out how it comes out into the Tzach Hadash V'Achav. Okay, I don't have time for that. Okay. Kama malo hotavot lamakom aleinu. You guys have it, the Dayenu?
Mm-hmm.